Ben McKenzie is an actor, scientist, comedian, feminist, improviser, geek, voiceover artist, games player, presenter, nerd, writer, and he's ginger. He's been described as geek comedy's patron saint and the anti-Hitler. He's written and performed sketch comedy, comedy science lectures, and stand-up for over a decade. Best known as the man in the lab coat, and well known around Melbourne Museum for leading comedy tours, Ben McKenzie is going to be the host of Science Rewired. How did you start to become an actor, a scientist, a comedian, a feminist, an improviser, and a geek? That's a lot of things to be.
It is a lot of things. Well, I've been performing in one way or another for as long as I can remember in my life, but I've been doing it on stage for actual audiences probably for 20-ish years.
Wow.
But the scientician part I got into because my background was as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved to Melbourne about 15 years ago to go to uni and study arts and science. I found that I was spending my time doing fringe and student theatre and really getting into it and loving it. Which I kind of knew that I would, but more so than I expected, I think.
Yeah, Melbourne's a good place for that.
It is. I just loved it a lot. But after a few years, I realised that if I was going to get more performing work, I really needed to make my own work. Mm. So I'd need to start writing stuff myself. And I was really heavily influenced by some friends of mine in such a way that I believe that the best way to do comedy is to write about something that you're really passionate about and that you love. So I started writing, when I started doing solo comedy, I started writing about science, which is how I got into that. So that first solo show, I think it was 2004.
Yeah. So how did that become the man in the lab coat?
I worked with a great woman, Linda Catalano, who was my director on that show. And we sort of went through a number of ideas about how to make that into a persona. And the original idea for that show was that it was about many things, but it ended up being about particularly three things, one of which was how science had affected my life personally.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of the story of my life as it interacted with science. It was also about what science is, but the third thing that it was about was what science is not, or how you can tell if someone is legitimately scientific. And so that first show ended up being called Listen to the Man in the Lab Coat, and I was the man in the lab coat in the show, but I never finished a science degree, so I don't have any proper qualifications.
The
point of that was kind of just because someone's wearing a lab coat doesn't mean that they know what they're talking about.
Excellent. So how greatly has science influenced your life? What are some of the things that you're passionate about regarding science?
I'm really passionate about, I think, just the scientific method of finding out about the world around us, which using evidence to solve problems and answer questions. And the thing that I love most about it is that, as a performer, I'm a storyteller. I love stories. I love to tell stories. I love to listen to stories. And science tells the best stories of all.
Oh, yeah.
They're stories about the whole universe and how it actually works. And the best stories always have a bit of truth in them, and scientific stories are, the best version of the truth that we can find.
Tell me about your museum comedy tours. What are the stories that you tell there when you have to do a comedy tour and a museum? How do they go together?
I was really lucky when I did a couple of gigs for Melbourne Museum and during Science Week, National Science Week. And I thought, well, why are we doing this during National Science Week? We should do something during Comedy Festival as well, because I'd done a couple of comedy festivals at that stage. So I approached the Comedy Festival and the museum. I said, I want to do a tour in here and with comedians. Funny. And everyone was really enthusiastic. I was really pleased. No one sort of went, what? That's insane. You can't do that. which is great. And it started, it's sort of become a different thing than what it started out being. So it started out, that we just had a couple of three stand-up comedians, one of whom was usually me.
Mm-hmm.
And we would each have a small section of the Science Life Gallery at Melbourne Museum. And the audiences would come in. And the stress that I always had was that I want you, comedians, you can write whatever gags you want, but if you're going to say something that sounds factual, then that should be true. And that was basically the constraint on it, was that whatever you do, whatever jokes you write, that's fine, but you can't lie to people unless it's very obvious that it's a lie for a joke's sake. So it's, and I think all the comedians I've had over the years who've done the show, I think really enjoy that aspect of it. Because I think when you put constraints on your art, whether it's comedy or anything else, it sort of it forces you to make decisions that you wouldn't otherwise make. So if you're standing in front of, you know, if you go into the Wild Gallery, for example, which is this tremendous room full of all of these taxidermy animals, people go in there and they find the animals that they like the ones that have the funniest expressions on their faces or just look weird or are arranged in next to other animals so that you can sort of make a gag about what it looks like they're doing. But then they'll go away and they'll research, what is that animal? What's it called? What does it do? Like, what's interesting about it? And they'll find out things that they would never have found out before and write gags about them. And it becomes a lot of fun.
Brilliant. You've got a wonderful mixture of both science, comedy and education. You're pushing the boundaries.
I try my best. And I think the thing that I like to do is to really... I try to focus to, not exclusively, but I try to always make sure everything I do is very accessible to adults, because I think that's an area where we don't have as much going on. There's a lot of initiatives to reach children, which I think is great, but I also firmly believe that kids are easy to sell science to. Kids actually love science. Everyone's a scientist when they're a kid, as many people before me have said, and which I totally agree with. Because they're curious about the world around them. They want to know answers. And when they grow up and get older, they lose that. And I think, again, I'm not the first person to say this, but, kids, when they become adults, are taught by our society and culture that science isn't cool, because there's no reinforcement that it is cool. You know, you read the newspaper, there's no proper science section that says, hey, these amazing science things happened. And, there's so few television programs now about, certainly not, topical ones that are about scientific news. So it's this weird sort of thing where people lose it because, we're not telling them that it's cool and it's exciting. So I try to make sure all the stuff that I do is to engage not just adults. I mean, a lot of it is, particularly the museum tours, are very family friendly, but to engage adults through comedy. And I think people like it, although it is hard to reach people who are not already into science, I must admit.
Well, that's going to be a big focus of the Science Rewired conference, about how to reach out and get people engaged no matter what age they are. And you're going to be the host and facilitator for many of the sessions. What will be in store for us there?
Well, I don't know. I can't give away any gags.
Oh, okay.
mainly because I haven't written them yet. But okay. I think it's I'm really looking forward to it. Like, it's such a great initiative, because I use social media a lot. And it's one of the I'm particularly addicted to Twitter. I love Twitter, and I find I get a really good response from people, because Twitter's great for comedians because it's so short. It forces you to really get to the point of a gag. Like, you have to cut out all the stuff that's not joke. As a friend of mine who taught me how to write gags once said to me, so you just make the joke as quick and as to the point as possible. And if it's a science joke, you also got to communicate whatever the idea is as well. Mm. And I find that people go for that. Like, if you write a really good Twitter gag and it's about a scientific bit of science news, people retweet it, they'll reply to it, they'll engage with it. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And you've seen stuff like the recent Mars landing.
Yes.
Curiosity went nuts. I mean, it's got like a million followers on Twitter within a week of being created. And I think a more important measure of its success is that there are about 6 or 7 spoof accounts for the Curiosity rover. And they're all doing amazing gags interpreting what Curiosity is doing through different lenses. So I think that kind of stuff is great. But also, having a look at the program for what's going to be on, I'm really excited about a lot of the other presenters and what they're going to be talking about. I think I'm going to learn a lot at the conference myself.